Today's program was brought to you by Catskill Provisions. Located in a small corner of northwest Catskill Mountains, they specialize in creating raw, all-natural, handmade food products. For more information, visit CatskillProvisions.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. In the studio today, we have the lovely Bridget Fertile of the Noble Experiment in New York City, a newer distillery that just released its first product, the Oney's Rum.
Yes, yeah. So basically started introducing it late in last year and been full steam ahead since January 1st, so very exciting.
Awesome. You know, it's really cool. Like, I know that there has been like kind of a checkered past with like distilleries in New York, and it's so cool to see not only that, you know, distillation is a market, there's actually a viable market for it in New York City, but also that I think for the most part, like all the products that have been coming out over the past like few years, all the distilleries in New York City, they're all really cool. They're really cool products. So it's like, yay for us, New York.
Yeah, no, it's really exciting. And it's really awesome that there's consumers and people who purchase the product that are able to keep us alive. So,
yeah. I mean, I think, obviously, like, we, you know, no one moves to this city to just chill out. Everyone comes here to, like, you know, work your ass off and, like, you know, make a place for yourself, a name for yourself. And, I think that, you know, a lot of this comes from, like you said, having a product that people really appreciate and they're enthusiastic about. It comes from just that kind of like work hard, play hard mentality that we have here, and you know, cutting a lot of the bullshit out of like our daily lives. And so it's like, it's cool, you know, like with food and with drinks that you know, like you said, people
appreciate the hustle. Yeah. Totally. And they appreciate hard work, and they can, it's cool that they can connect to a story where there's something real and tangible behind a product that they're consuming. How it's made and where it's made and who it's made by. So,
well, speaking of that story, why don't you give us a little background on how this all came about?
So I actually have lived in the city my whole life. My family's been here for generations, and I happened to go to business school and work on Wall Street after business school. And I had joined a consumer staples team at a hedge fund and was designated shortly thereafter as the global alcoholic beverage analyst. So I spent my days researching and investing in publicly traded beer, wine, and spirits companies. But after 4 or so years, decided I was really dissatisfied with what I was doing. And I was really sick of watching other people do awesome things, as you were just talking about, in craft beer and craft spirits and the whole local movement of everything in this city. And I decided that my time had really run its course, and I was going to pour my life savings into this, move back home with my parents, jump in with both feet and try and pull this off and get it off the ground. And if there was a time in my life to do this, it was now. So,
yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting that, you know, that you were actually kind of connected to the, like, the spirit. Well, you were definitely connected to, like, the spirits industry. Mm-hmm. Through your job. You know, and I've heard of other people who worked in different career paths that started up a distillery or a brewery or a winery, you know, or a bar or restaurant. A lot of them, like, never had worked in the industry or even close to it. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that you had that, like, on the periphery, you know, that's...
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it was cool that I, you know, had some sort of understanding about the business, the market, the consumer from the business side, but going from sitting at a desk and reading reports and doing research to, you know, wearing construction boots and a t-shirt and driving a forklift around a distillery are two totally different things, but it's so cool to be able to make something tangible and then watch other people enjoy it, so it's really rewarding.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually have a forklift license. Jack, can I bring that in? Can I, like, frame that and put it in there? I got to dig that out.
How did you get that?
I was working at a graphic design place in Oklahoma City, and we had, you know, giant, like, skids of printed goods that we had to move around, and someone came in one day, and they were like, hey, we're doing forklift training. I'm like, yes! That is one of those, like, bucket list things. I don't know. I never thought about it before this, but God damn it, I need a forklift license.
It's funny that...
So I can have this conversation. That's the whole reason why I got it.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty useful tool, obviously, especially when you're in the distillery by yourself and you have to move, you know, lots of heavy stuff.
Fun. So. They're fun to drive.
They are fun. They're actually super efficient for what they do. It's like, oh, someone actually who designed these actually was working in a warehouse and knows how to move around.
Sick of me and my buddies having to shove skids around.
Exactly.
There has to be a better way. Cool. So, so you jumped into it. You started doing the construction, a year and a half ago?
Yeah. So I jumped out of my job about Christmas of 2011, left my apartment, moved home, and signed the lease around the same time. And we were under construction for most of last year. So the plans got approved in about March of last year. And we started construction in April, finished up at the end of the summer, and spent the fall and into the beginning of the winter, I guess, working the kinks out of the process and building some inventory, and now it's time to hit the streets.
I like how calm and like nonchalant you are about like talking about the kinks, because there's so much that goes into opening a distillery or brewery. There's so much hassle and red tape and like DOB, DOH, SLA, like all these different departments just basically almost telling you can't do it every step of the way.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. Patience is not my strong suit, and it was something that was so out of my control, and it was just waiting. And there's a lot of costs associating with waiting. Obviously, you're paying rent on a space and everything else. The red tape and the city and the state and the Fed is just, there are no words. And then I always joke that one of the most naive things that I basically miscalculated in thinking about opening a distillery was once the equipment is installed and in place and approved, that it's just going to work. Yeah, you know, that's so silly in retrospect, obviously, not to think of that. But acquired some skills on those first few weeks, 20-hour days by myself in the distillery, priming pumps and troubleshooting the boiler. And so getting a lot of skills that I never thought I would have. But their learning curve is flattening, which is good.
Yeah, you start learning about, like, oh, did I ever think I was going to need a torque wrench to make rum?
Exactly, <You know? laughs> exactly.
Yeah, there's, you know, it's always, like, the troubleshooting. I guess it's true of anything, but especially with, like, a distillery. You know, even with the seasonal changes of, like, your products that you're using to distill, like your sugar cane for this instance, you know, like your molasses and your sugarcane, it's not always going to be the same. So, you know, there's constantly like tweaking and evolving, like with the different yearly, like the raw products.
Yeah. And it's a constant, you know, striving to improve and make the product better and make your technique better and keep learning. So, but that makes it a challenge, and that's something that excites me. So,
yeah. So let's talk about the rum. Okay, so the first product that's coming out is Oni's rum.
Yep. So really, like, into rum personally, but into a lot of spirits.
Was that something, like, were you, like, a big rum drinker before?
I can't say that I was necessarily a huge rum drinker. I've had a passion and hobby for different types of spirits and beers and wine. I think I have in terms of the whole liquor category, I guess I'm partial to rum in a lot of ways. Now I drink rum for the most part. That's it. Really think it's a versatile spirit, and enthralled with the history of it in this country. And the fact that that was the first spirit we distilled, and most people don't know that.
Exactly. That's true.
The goal is to bring back something to the Northeast, and I'm enthralled with the history of distilling and brewing in this country, since they're just starting to come back after so many years, and due to legislative changes and a consumer that's driving the demand for this. And I think that rum is an interesting way to play that. It's a tough category in a lot of respects, I'm coming to learn, because there's not a lot of education around what rum is, and the consumer, I think, is confused by that.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping to take my little part in playing a role in educating the consumer on that.
Totally. And, you know, to me, rum is a... more so than any other spirit category, the spectrum is so wide. I mean, like, you know, you can't just, like, especially for me as a bartender, when I look at, you know, old cocktail books and it says, you know, use rum, it's like, wait a minute, you can't just say use rum, but it'll say like Trinidad rum or like rum from St. Croix or Martinique rum, you know, and they vary so much.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Not just like based on like the fact that it's sugarcane or molasses, but like the different types of stills,
the different stills, yeah, the climates, exactly what they age in, where they age, the climates, the feedstock. And because I think that's really happens because rum is, in my opinion, or probably in fact, the most loosely defined spirit that that exists. It's really like the only definition around it is that it has to come from some form of the sugarcane plant.
So right. It's not like scotch or cognac or bourbon even, you know, there's no like, standardized rules for it,
which
is cool. It's actually kind of a misfit spirit in a lot of ways.
It is. It is.
Which is why pirates drink it.
Exactly. So, you know, obviously, or not obviously, but Oney's is 100% molasses-based rum, and you're pretty much using molasses or brown sugar, I guess, for a sugar wash moonshine type of product if you're not close to a sugarcane farm, because sugarcane juice ferments on its own in 3 days, so you can't really ship it or store it or do anything like that. So I actually use a really high sugar content rum, which is not so traditional for most widely available molasses-based rums, because the most widely available type of molasses is a blackstrap molasses. It's a low sugar content, high in other minerals and phosphorus, nitrogen, iron, calcium. So actually the taste of the rum is a little bit similar to an agricole rum because the molasses is almost similar to a juice. So it's not so sweet. It's really sweet on the nose, but on the palate, it's pretty dry, kind of reedy and a little funky. Intended to be something totally unique and kind of a hybrid between the two generic styles.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about this, but we're not drinking.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for bringing this on.
No.
Oh, yeah. Totally on the nose. It's got like more of like an earthier, like grassier kind of, like you said, like agricole
stuff. Yeah. And it's also something else that differentiates. It's fermented in cold tanks for 5 days. And so get a lot of esters from that on the flavor profile, as opposed to something that a lot of rums are, you know, fermented for 48 to 72 hours. So able to keep the yeast happy for 5 days and then distilled at a high ABV, 85 to 95% before blended down. So a lot of those impurities are left out for an unaged spirit. It leaves it pretty smooth.
Yeah. What can we go back to? You're talking about like sugarcane fermenting on its own after 3 days. This is something I've never really had the chance to like clear this up, like just for myself even. But like, so for instance, how do like sugarcane syrups, like, you know, like for like the alternative sweeteners for, you know, like I know like JM does one. Are they stabilizing that with rum?
Yeah, I can't be quoted on actually the technique on how they make that. I would guess they're doing something to the juice in terms of like extracting the sugars out of it first, something probably similar to sugar refining, which is where molasses comes from. Molasses is a byproduct of sugar refining. So in the case of our molasses, it's somewhere in between the final product of a blackstrap, because there's a lot of sugar still left in there. So I would assume either processing the sugar after it's been extracted or cutting it off somewhere in between.
And blackstrap, like for the listeners, because I know for me, like I like using blackstrap, you know, like in certain like their tiki cocktails, like the Cornyn Oil is a classic like blackstrap rum, but blackstrap typically is more on like the drier, like earthier side, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot more like congener kind of like funk.
It obviously again varies, as we were talking about, by where it's made and how it's made and if they add sugar at the end of it, because obviously a lot of big and small distilleries add caramel coloring or sugar or something else at the end that alternates the total flavor profile of the spirit. So again, and also, you know, depending on where your molasses is being sourced from, I'm sure, as well, in terms of the climate and the type of cane growing in that region of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting product. Like going back to what we were saying before about how like just rum varies so much from like island to island, mm-hmm. you know, country to country. It's like even I always like to do this with my bartenders, like, and sometimes when I'm doing trainings, I'll take like a bunch of different types of sweeteners, you know, like mm-hmm. honey, different types of sugars, curamito, like black sugars, blackstrap molasses, even, you know, maple, different types of maple syrup,
yeah,
you know, and just like line them up. And, you know, when you start putting that together, agave, nectars, you know, there's so many, like once you put them all like out in front of you, you realize like, oh, wow, I actually have like 20 different options for a sweetener,
yeah,
for a cocktail. And they're all so freaking different.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
crazy.
It's can, amazing.
You basically distill any of them and it's, it turns
yeah.
into rum.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, doing something, I mean, we're using all domestic molasses, but, and the rum that was made back in the day in the colonies in the Northeast was, using molasses shipped up from the Caribbean, but, trying to create more of a domestic feel to, everything we distill at the, place in a few blocks away in Bushwick. So
in beautiful Bushwick. let's take a quick break and we'll get back and talk more about rum with Bridget from Oni's Room.
You're listening to Jones by Jade and me, Jack Inslee, on heritageradionetwork.org.
Catskill Provisions has Valentine's Day literally in the bag with their Seal the Deal gift bag. Start with chocolate honey truffles and then move on to breakfast in bed with their traceable organic pancake mix and New York State maple syrup. Sure to satisfy any ardent locavore, check out the Catskill Provisions Seal the Deal package at www.catskillprovisions.com.
Hey, we are back.
Yeah.
You are. nice commercial, Jack.
Do you have a Valentine's Day date?
I'm going to sit around with a bottle of Oni's Rum and
yeah.
you know, hang out.
Nice.
So we're back. We're talking with Bridget from Oni's Rum and the Noble Experiment, new distillery in New York City. We've just been sitting around talking about the challenges of opening up a new distillery and putting out some products after, you know, having everybody else do it. And you want to start doing it on your own, and that's awesome. That's totally, like, no pun intended, the spirit of New York.
Awesome.
Pun intended. I was waiting for Jack to throw out some sound effect there. But he did do it. Okay, we talked a little bit before, like, the break about how rum was essentially the original spirit that was being made in the United mm-hmm. States.
Yeah.
And how that's kind of a not so well-known fact.
No, it's not. People seem, I think whiskey, you know, is kind of known as America's spirit for a variety of reasons, but one of the first distilleries, if not the first distillery on record, was on present-day Staten Island, 1664, I believe the record was from rum distillery. And the rum was shipped up from the Caribbean, the molasses was shipped up from the Caribbean, distilled here, used here for trade and profit and fun, and also, you know, used to exchange for slaves in Africa that were then brought to the sugar plantations in the Caribbean to make sugar and therefore molasses. Slaves were really the people who founded rum in the 1620s, I believe, in Barbados. They realized that the stuff they were throwing away after sugar refining could actually be distilled and made into booze. And, you know, it was...
Which is basically the way that all booze has come about.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it was...
Not slavery, but trying to use everything that we can to and preserve it. You know?
Yeah, and so it was a huge part of life here and one of the contributors to the American Revolution. I mean, the Sugar Act, I believe, of 1764 was when the British imposed a tax on molasses, making it unprofitable to distill and use in trade. And that's why people say the Boston Tea Party was really about molasses instead of tea. And rum stayed popular on the low throughout the American Revolution and after it. But as people started growing, moving west, growing grains and having no way to ship the grains and can only, you know, sell them to their neighbors, basically, they figured out that they could distill those grains and make whiskey and make a lot more money off of that than the grains they could sell to their neighbors. And, you know, that's how America's spirit has kind of been thought of as whiskey, not rum.
Well, even like you mentioned before the break as well, you said sugar wash moonshine.
Yeah.
Which is essentially a rum.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's also kind of like predating, like, we think about it. Typically, people think about moonshine as being like limited to like a grain distiller, like a whiskey. Mm-hmm. But actually, you know, it's anything you're making illegally.
Yeah, exactly.
That you can ferment and distill.
Yeah.
But so like even like the earlier moonshine was rum.
Yeah.
Molasses based.
Yeah.
And then, I was down in Belmar, New Jersey. Went deep sea fishing.
Oh, cool.
With Dean Ween from the band Ween, which was awesome. I'll show you pictures later. But we were in the package store, because you call it package stores there. it's a liquor store. But, speaking of the oldest distillate, Laird's, who makes Applejack, you know, we think of that they are the oldest distillery in the United States. They actually make a rum. It's terrible. Sorry, Lisa, but it's terrible. it's kind of like, it's something you probably can only find in New Jersey. But when I saw that in the liquor store, it made me think about that as well. You know, like, here it is, the oldest distillery in the United States. And then they have a rum.
Yeah.
Not very well distributed rum.
Yeah.
But, you know, it kind of... All of that together makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, the oldest distillery, oldest spirit in the United States.
Yeah. And, you know, hopefully that, you know, people find that, you know, I'm sure they find it interesting, obviously. But as we were talking about earlier, the challenges of educating the consumer on rum. And I don't think people associate rum with the U.S., you know, they associate it with the islands for good reason, and Central and South America, and juice-like drinks and frozen drinks with, umbrellas in them. And I've been, you know, talking to people and serving at a lot of the small events that I've been doing, daiquiris, and people don't know what a daiquiri is. People don't know what a classic daiquiri
is. It's true.
And it's mind-blowing to me that, you know, I mean, there's obviously a time and a place for a frozen daiquiri on the beach somewhere, but the way that
Robbie's
came about,
yeah,
you know, the way that came about was from a classic daiquiri that people were drinking, and the versatility of a classic daiquiri for what sweetener to use, to add bitters, to use different juices if you want, aside
Dash
from a lot. Yeah, exactly. That, you know, you could build a whole, in my opinion, a whole cocktail menu off of just the daiquiri.
That's true.
And people love them and they don't know about them. And so
most bartenders, most like spirits writers, mixologists, we all agree that, you know, the daiquiri is kind of like the most perfect cocktail.
Yeah.
It's simplicity. It's like clean, crisp, like refreshing. It's the greatest cocktail.
Yeah. And it's easy also for me to tell people who want to get their hands dirty at home with something to make. And it's, you know, not a rum and coke or something.
It's a gateway drink.
Yeah. Yeah. And
let's
get real. Yeah, totally. And it's easy to find the ingredients and it's easy to replicate. Yeah. So, just another kind of like historic classic cocktail that that has changed in perception over time.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like one of those things where, like, anytime someone brings a rum into one of my bars to show me a new product, that's the first thing. And I know that a lot of people are the same way. It's like the first drink that I make is a daiquiri.
Yeah, Yeah.
To try out the rum.
Yeah. No, and I love when people do that because my rum makes a really good daiquiri. But
I can tell. It's cool, too. Like, nowadays, I always say, too, that it's, like, a really exciting time to be in this industry. And over, like, the past, I've been doing this for, like, 7 or 8 years now. So not very long compared mm-hmm. to a lot of people. But just seeing the progression of, like, what was around when I first started doing it to now, mm-hmm. it's crazy. And even the way that people drink. I remember the first time I was bartending and a couple of really cute girls came into the bar and ordered scotch, like, neat. And I was like, I almost lost my mind. It was the hottest thing ever.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But so there's also this progression where a lot of people are drinking rum, kind of going back to, like, you know, sipping on rum or having on the rocks, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. which I think is really cool too.
Yeah.
And it's not limited to anything that's, like, necessarily aged in wood. I know a lot of people are drinking, like, an unaged, like, white rum too.
Yeah. I drink it on the rocks for sure, or neat, but and in cocktails. I'm hoping that other people do that too. I don't know if that's naive or hopeful and them looking at a white rum and wanting to drink it not mixed, but people do taste it and they're surprised in the taste and they say, hey, I think I could, this is good enough to drink on its own. So, and to that, to the point of people changing their drinking patterns, I had two guys in the distillery, you know, late 20 somethings that were, you know, in finance or some other professional industry in the city. And they were just talking about how I never want to go to a bar again and get, like, a vodka soda or a rum and coke or, like, a Bud Light. I want to, you know, when I drink, I want to be drinking something good and I want to be drinking a nice cocktail or a good beer. I can't go back to that anymore.
I'm not going to go to a restaurant and just order a plate full of, like, white Wonder Bread. You know,
yeah, yeah, like, no,
need something that's gonna make me feel like I'm doing something.
Yeah, you know? No, it's just awesome to watch that happen and how once you go to a certain level of enjoying spirits or beer or food or whatever you are, it's hard to get the consumer to go back to what once was. So
Well, it's also, you know, like, technically we don't need to drink alcohol, you know. We need to eat food to survive. We don't need to drink alcohol to survive. So if you're doing it,
yeah,
you might as well be enjoying
exactly
as much as you can. Like, yeah. The best things you can have is the right amount, obviously.
Yeah.
Be responsible.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and pairing that up with food, with friends.
Yeah.
With occasions. It's totally, like, that's the way to be.
That change is great for, you know, people like me and people in the industry. And you were mentioning how much has changed over 7 or 8 years. that mentality of the consumer, which mm-hmm. buys the product, you know, is keeping us all going and allowing for people to want to drink better and eat better and for the proliferation of this industry. So it's pretty cool.
Awesome. What's the website?
TNENYC.com.
As in the Noble Experiment, New York City.
Yes, .com. And we also have Onys, OWNEYS.com, which is a video about how we make this stuff. So.
Oh, cool. I can't wait to check that out. Yeah. I've been on the website, but I haven't seen the video. I think it's time for us to go in and have Mike make us a couple of daiquiris. What do you think?
That sounds great to me.
All right. Thank you so much, Bridget, for coming on the show today.
No, thanks for having
me. Check out Oni's Rum, and we will see you next week on Speakeasy. Cheers.
Cheers. Save your soul, the devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that
send. It's going to get you some. Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.